So, just I mentioned just a few days ago, Deacon Michael was ordained, and the purpose of the diaconate is service. And every priest, before he's ordained a priest, has to become a deacon. I said this a few weeks ago, but it deserves to be repeated, that the very heart of the church's mission doesn't just care for our spiritual needs, but because we believe as Christians that the whole of the human person is body, soul, and spirit, to neglect the body while caring for the spirit is nuts, just as much as it is to care for the spirit, the body without caring for the spirit. That the whole person, for true salvation to occur, the whole salvation of the person has to be engaged. And so one of the things that makes this very difficult is that it's hard for us to imagine a way in which spiritual and physical and all these other types of health get drawn together into one. And so usually this results in a kind of fantasy thinking in our part. You know, whenever we start thinking to ourselves, if only X, then I'd be happy. If only X, things would be good. And in fact, you can see this in the way that art and culture and even comic book movies play themselves out. Because they kind of fulfill, in a sense, a wishful thinking, a fantasy lifestyle in which we imagine a world in which we would actually be good. The only way in which I would actually try to save the world is if little webs came out of my finger and I could climb up walls. But in the meantime, I'm just going to have to wallow in my own sense of powerlessness. Because that's the real issue in our world today. The real issue in our world today is not that people do not know what the right thing to do is. We're almost all pretty much sure what the right thing is. So when we hear, "You shall love your neighbor as yourself," we're thinking, "Yep, that sounds pretty clear to me. And I didn't need Jesus to tell me that." In fact, they didn't need Jesus to tell them that. That was in the law and the prophets. And you can find similar iterations of the golden rule in pretty much every religion and philosophy around the world. But Christianity is not the golden rule. It's something more than that. You have to try your best with the golden rule and realize the human condition of powerlessness. And then comes the next phase. And our culture today is now facing the fear and the loneliness of powerlessness, and we know what we should do, but we just have a hard time doing it. Which is why I'm convinced of this, not so much that I'm absolutely right, but I'm convinced enough that it's worth saying that much of the violent outbursts that are happening in our cultures today are a result not of people asserting their power, but from people who know themselves to be weak and are trying in so many ways in terms of recapturing their sense of lost control. You don't pick up a gun if you already, like if you're Bruce Lee, use a simple example, if you're Bruce Lee and a martial arts expert, then you only pick up a gun if the other guy has a gun. Bruce Lee is confident. He knows exactly what he's doing, and he knows that nobody's going to mess with him. So he's not afraid. But the moment we are afraid, that's when we start getting tense. That's when we start using threats. That's when we start using violence, is because of that powerlessness. So this is truly what needs to be addressed. And this is why we can often result in ourselves that we all, this is where the moral compromises come from. We start questioning not whether or not it's right or wrong to do X, but whether or not certain people should be done justice for or to. We know, for instance, it's right to care for all people equally, but then we start saying to ourselves, yeah, but there's only so many resources to go around. And that's your problem. Not just your problem. It's my problem. It's everybody's problem. We need to be able to truly know how we get motivated. And of course, this is also where that temptation on the part of the lawyer comes from. Because Jesus now starts preaching this very thing that Israel should have already known. And so, of course, this lawyer comes up to test him. Because, of course, if anybody starts proclaiming mercy, truth, justice, our first thought is to say, is this guy a fraud or not? That's going to be anybody's first impulse. Because we're not going to want to, you know, waste our energy and time giving our life to God, of course, if it's going to be a fraud or if that guy's a fraud. So he tests Jesus. What does this man truly know? What must I do to attain eternal life? Now that is the question of questions. If you really want to know what motivates the human heart, that's the question. What must I do to attain eternal life? You can find many subsidiary versions of the same question in the world today. Lord, what must I do to be happy? Lord, what must I do to be successful? Lord, what must I do to be popular and to have friends? But in the end, what we're saying is, what is the blessed life? So Jesus says to the guy what he should have already known. You know the commandment. What is it? To love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Again, you notice that totality. You can't be blessed if you don't think. It's very important to use this organ just as much as it's important to use this one. Just as much as you have to be able to, when you love people, you don't just feel like you love them. You actually have to do something. So you have to have that whole integration. And then the guy said, then Jesus says, you've answered rightly. Go and do it. And so, of course, to justify himself, the man says, and who is my neighbor? And there is the question of questions. And that's the reason why we don't actually engage in this. Because we want to start to find qualifiers, not just about what love should be, but who should receive it. Who's worthy of it? And this has, in a sense, infected our Catholic and our Christian lives. And then, as a result, our society has also been infected by this type of questioning. Because it doesn't ask the right question. It tries to find out who's right and who's wrong. And that's, ironically, the wrong question. We want to find how we can do just enough right for ourselves so that we can say, my castle's doing okay. If there's something wrong in the world, it's because of those people. And that's not the right question. So Jesus' question reverts and flips the whole thing on its head. Because he tells the Good Samaritan passage, the one that so many people know so well, so much so that whenever you hear a news story and they talk about a person doing good for a random stranger, they always call him a Good Samaritan. That this Good Samaritan does something for this man whom he doesn't know, who's been beaten. And he takes care of him. And then he says, which one was the neighbor to the man who was harmed? Well, the Samaritan. Then do that. How many of us actually really know that one of the reasons that we prevent ourselves from doing good is the same reason we don't wake up early in the morning and we actually look at our cell phones for about 30 minutes before we actually get out of bed? It's like, okay, here it is. What's going on in the world? What are all the difficulties? What are all the trials? Ooh, look who celebrity X is dating celebrity Y now. This is really interesting. It's not, but it's a temptation we all suffer from. Because we have this kind of narrowing down. We have been burned so many times. And so we stop. We disengage. And then gradually we cease to feel. Gradually we cease to love. So he says to the people, if you know me, if you are my disciple, go and take care of those with whom you do not have a connection. And that is the measure. Because what Christ affords us, what Christ offers us, is not a new teaching, but himself. He is the image of the invisible God, says Paul in today's second reading. The firstborn of all creation. In him everything was created, and for him everything was created. It's not so much about being nice, it's about being patterned according to him. And so then when we do good, we are not doing it in order to be rewarded, in order to be given what we want. We do good because Christ is good, and because he is our life. And the Jewish people knew this already. We see this in the psalm today. That the law of the Lord does right for the heart, that it is more to be desired than gold and silver, that doing the Lord's work is in fact its own reward. But I'm going to offer one little qualification. I've met many times, or I've read many books, sadly, and they weren't all that interesting, But I've read a few books that would try to say that you do good. Well, why? Because it makes you feel good. Well, why do you give money to those who are suffering? Why do you visit the sick? Because it affirms me. That's the same selfishness. That's the same selfishness that we need to overcome. Now, it's nice to start there. When you're dealing with children, then of course you do offer a certain amount of bribery. You know, if you do this, then if you mow the lawn, I will give you something. If you do this, I will give you something. But gradually, as we mature, we have to know that these things are worth doing in themselves. And so the experience of malaise, the experience of exhaustion, is a good teaching moment for us to start questioning ourselves as to why we do what we do. Because if we do give up because we are not being thanked, if we do give up because we are not appreciated, if we do give up because we don't feel loved, then that is precisely the wound that Christ comes to heal. All of the violence, all the economic inequality, all of the racial inequality, all of these things that we constantly see in the news, we're filled in a world of victims. Because everybody feels as if they're not being filled. And that is because only Christ can fill the heart. And so when we meet him, we are filled from his superabundance that we can give of our hearts. It doesn't necessarily mean that our bank accounts are going to be more overflowing. And if you ever meet a Christian preacher who tells you that the more you accept God, the more money you'll have, run. Run for the hills. Because they do not know Christ, they do not know his gospel, they do not know who he is. That the superabundance of wealth that he offers us transforms our inner life for the generosity of presence. What truly gave the Samaritan the freedom to be so open to the man who was broken? He's a broken man himself. The Samaritan knows exactly what it's like, especially for the Jewish hearers that Jesus is speaking to. He knows exactly what it's like to be called refuse. He knows exactly what it's like to be called useless. And I'm trying to think of all these nasty words that I can't say in church. So it's just, I'm having this kind of backlog of words that are coming out right now. Where he knows exactly what it's like to be society's scum. And so when he sees this man broken on the side of the road, he knows exactly what it's like to undergo these sufferings. And so he doesn't just say to himself, sucks to be him. He gives of his own heart. He gives of his own time. He gives of his money. Because every single one of us, if we read this passage and we think, the scribe and the priest and the Levite, these guys are dirtbags, I'm sorry to say it's all of us. We're all afraid of getting involved in other people's business. We're all afraid of getting really mixed up in the scandals and the difficulties of life. We're all really afraid of participating lest it go bad and we look bad. So be it. And it is, in this weird way, my own particular pleasure that the name of priests have been so besmirched in recent time, because now I know exactly what it feels like to be called horrible names even when I haven't done a thing. It teaches you to identify with the rejected. It teaches you to identify with the broken. And then we ask ourselves, how do we fix the world? Well, first, we have the humility to realize we can't. Our goal is not to fix people. Our goal is to be present with them. Our goal is not to change the world. Our goal is to change ourselves. If ever we want to increase the sense of powerlessness in the world, we should set up standards, of course, that we can't live up to. But when Jesus gives us a very simple and straightforward directive, love your neighbor as yourself, well then go and do it. If we're tired of the corruption, political, economic, social, from affecting ourselves, then when we have the chance of undoing the damage, then we do it. when we know that what God needs of us is to call our grandmother or our parent that we haven't spoken to in a long time, then go and do it. If ever we ask ourselves what is preventing this world from changing, it's not because of politicians and bishops and corrupt leaders from around the world. It's because of all of us haven't decided to take up this mantle and to serve. So whenever we feel challenged, whenever we know that God is knocking at our door, inviting us to do something, remember what Jesus says today. It's really simple. Go and do it.